Welcome to Mojo for the Modern Man. This is your host, Ken Mossman. And today I am thrilled to be joined by Howie James Oma for the first half of this two-part conversation. And of course, we're going to be hearing stories of Howie's younger days and there's and a lot more. So Howie, what are guests going to hear today?
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me. They're going to hear about blame, treasure, and trouble.
Blame, treasure, and trouble. And yeah, I can say, having heard this, I can say there's a whole lot more that you're going to be hearing, as well as some not only some great stories, but some beautiful wisdom as well. Just a quick reminder, if you haven't yet, please subscribe to Mojo for the Modern Man wherever you get your podcasts. And with that, let's dive into this rich conversation. Act one with Howie James Oma. Enjoy. Howie James Oma, it is an absolute delight to welcome you to Mojo for the Modern Man. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. So I really appreciate being here. Yeah.
I think we're going to have some fun, and people are going to get to hear your pretty amazing story. If I do, you know, I don't want to give any spoilers, but your story is amazing. So what was it like growing up in your part of the world?
Adventurous, confusing, painful. Yeah, all of the three. Yeah.
Adventurous, confusing, and painful. And for context,
yeah,
where did you grow up?
So there are two parts about it. So first it was in Kampala. So Kampala, Uganda, just near. So there was a market. It was called Owino Market. Nowadays it's not a market anymore. Yeah. So there was during that time there were a lot of chaos. In Uganda, during that time, there was a lot of civil strife, and wars. And then we left Uganda with my mom and came back to Kenya. So I grew up. It's about 350 or so kilometers from Nairobi. Yeah, so it's a rural village, where I discovered there were a lot of things that I learned, which made it very adventurous. And I was moved from one school to the other. So by the time I settled in, I'd moved now to the third school. Yeah, to the third school. And then now after my dad died when I was 13 years old, then now everything now started being like adventure, pain and a lot of other things.
So how old were you when you were you born in Uganda or were you born in Kenya?
So I was born in Kenya, and then now my mom moved with me to Uganda. So just when I was 1 year old, yeah.
And how old were you when you came back from Uganda to Kenya?
When I came back, eight years.
So how much how much of your time in Uganda do you remember?
I remember there was there were a lot of wars, like the government was changing hands, and so there was this particular soldier. I don't remember his name, but there was this particular soldier who would come to my house, to our house, and then I would go with him to his house, and then I would just eat. The other one that I remember very well was that now when I was in nursery school, I used to lose a lot of things. Like I would go to school with a sweater, then come back without the sweater. Well, I will go maybe with my shirt on and then don't come back with a shirt on. So I used to be very careless and very reckless, I think. So compared to my sister who was a bit sane and a bit careful with these things. And then the other memory that I have, then I also have, okay, like two memories of Uganda also. There's another one, yeah, whereby now there's this woman from our neighborhood, okay, who ran to our house. So she ran to our house, and then now knelt on the door. Yeah, okay. She was being chased by a soldier. And so she knelt just begging for mercy. And then this soldier shot at her. But amazingly, she was not okay, like she never got shot by the police officer. By the soldier. And so for me, those are the memories that I had of Uganda, whereby there was a lot of chaos. And because we just lived near the market, and so the market was like a lot of chaos. Yeah, like people running over, people shouting, people going to the market, and all these things. Yeah, and all these things.
So there was a lot of so you're describing just the chaos of the market, and also the chaos of the political situation, and this woman who came. If I heard you correctly, came knocking at your door because she was being actually chased by a soldier who shot at her.
Yeah.
Well, did someone let her in, or you just have that vivid memory of her being at the door?
No, she just knelt at the door, looking at the soldier, and then just begging for mercy. And so the soldier shot at her, and then again, so it was like two bullets that went through the door. And it went through the bed, okay, like my mom's bed. And so, strangely enough, okay, like whenever my sister would see a soldier, she would just run and hide under the bed. But on this particular day, she didn't run to the bedroom; she just hid somewhere else. Yeah, which was very strange. And then this soldier, after shooting at the lady, he just threw like coins at her, and then he just left.
So first he shot at her, then he threw coins at her, and then disappeared.
Yeah, then left. Yeah, then just left like that. Yeah.
And how old were you when this happened?
I was actually sharing with my mom one day about it, and then she was like, "How do you remember that?" So I think I was either 6 or 7. Yeah, just before we left. Just before we left Uganda, but I still remember.
So it sounds like with all that the chaos and violence and everything else, what was it that, if you remember, what was it that finally initiated the leaving?
So Museveni, his name is Museveni, so he's the current president. And so just before he came in, as he was coming in, all foreigners were ordered out of the country. So because we were foreigners, we had to leave. But my dad remained behind. Yeah, for I don't know why he remained behind, but so we left with my mom and my two siblings. Yeah, so we left him back there. So he only joined us. He joined us in 1989, when I was 13 years old. But then again, now we stayed with him for just a couple of months, and then he died. Yeah.
So what was it like for you leaving as an 8-year-old then? You know, what was it like for you leaving him behind, or realizing that he was being left behind?
Yeah, so it was... it was not very good. And of course, now when you're a child, some of these things are out of your, like you don't make the decisions. But then again, now, just before we left, my mom and him, they brought two boys from the streets. And so one of them was called Joseph. And so they decided that we were going to come with one of the boys. And so we came up country to our rural village with Joseph. But Joseph never stayed. Yeah, so Joseph came And then now, I think just a few months, he lied to my mom that he needed to go back to Uganda. And so he went back to Uganda. So for me, the memories that I have of my dad was that now he was caring. Like he cared. He cared about other people. And he really deeply loved. I remember whenever we will remain with him at home, he will just cook. He will cook meals. And of course, his cooking now was different from my mom. Yeah, like my mom. He will use cooking oil, like a lot of cooking oil. Yeah. And also we will also listen on the radio with him, just listening to the radio, soccer, especially soccer, just with him listening, to a lot of soccer with him and a lot of music.
So you're listening to soccer game. You were listening to soccer games with him on the radio. You're describing him as deeply loving and as cooking with, if I'm hearing you correctly, Howie, cooking with a little too much oil.
Yeah, generously. You know how mothers are? Mothers usually, they think about the next meal. But when fathers are cooking, they're just generous with everything. Yeah, just
generous with all of it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And what was it like for you, now at the, so you moved, you left Uganda at the age of 8.
Yeah.
Five years later, you're 13 years old and he came to live with you, but only for a few months before he died. What was it like having him back, back in the house with you?
So when he came back, that was in, I think around November or December. So when he came back, he was very sick. He was very sick. And I think he had come back because he was sick. Yeah. So he was not very well. And so he was just very sickly. And then he died. So it was very confusing. It was very confusing. For me in particular, simply because of what was happening, especially just before the funeral. So, from where I come from, people can mourn even while eating. Someone is just mourning and crying over someone who has died. And one of the things that I noticed, my mom was not weeping. She was not crying about anything. And I think which was very confusing because the rest of the people were like crying and weeping and wailing, while her she was not doing so. But then again, now after he had been buried, my mom did not follow our traditions. So we have these traditions whereby now when a man dies and then now the wife now has to go through a lot of traditions. One of them, getting her hair, cutting her hair bald with a razor blade. The other one is that now she gets inherited by one of the men in the village. So my mom, being a Christian, she never did these things. Yeah, so she never followed through these things, which now, the consequence now was she was not allowed to dig our garden or even plant vegetables for a while. And also she was not also allowed to maybe build a new house. And so those were some of the consequences. And so one of my aunts who had actually brought my mom up, because my mom's mom died when she was very, very, very young. And so this aunt now was like her mom. And so she just stood up and said, because you refuse to follow this, you refuse to follow these rules. And so these are the consequences. We are going to look at you as if you are not one of our own because you refuse to do these things. And so for me, right from a very young age, like I was just dealing with a lot of rejection, like right, left, and center. We left Uganda, so that's like we were rejected there. Then now we've come back to Kenya. Then now my dad now died. And then, so just like a lot of changes and a lot of things that are happening that are well beyond beyond my control. Then there's another thing that also happened. Yeah, so in our village, our home is near a river. So this river, this little river, there are a lot of reeds. Yeah, there are a lot of reeds and a lot of bushes. So it means that now there were monkeys. There are monkeys that now will come to our farm. So it happened that now, as the eldest son, I was the one now who was now in charge of looking after the farm so that the monkeys do not come to eat the maize. And so in our village, I was the only now, let's say boy who was not playing with the other boys while they're playing up there. I'm on the farm. Yeah, so guarding the farm.
Because of the nearness of the river, and as you said, the reeds and the bushes, there were a lot of monkeys. And while the other boys were playing and doing boy things, quote unquote boy child having childhood boy things, you were taking care of the monkeys on the or guarding the farm against the monkeys, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yes, simply because their farms are not near where the monkeys, were coming to. Yeah, but then again now, so my dad left some books. And so I started now spending most of my time reading these books, And one of them was Think Big by Ben Carson. Then there was another one. A collection of short stories by Shakespeare. And so one of my favorite stories was Romeo and Juliet. The other one was The Merchant of Venice. The Merchant of Venice. So I used to now read a lot of these stories and think about a lot of things, especially about justice for widows, justice for orphans, and also justice for people who they are the less fortunate in the society.
And so how old are you now? You're reading Shakespeare, you're reading Think Big. Yeah, and having these ideas about justice for widows, etc. How old were you at that point?
That's now in 16.
And what was the impact on, you're getting to that a little bit, but I want to back up a little bit. What was the impact on you? You mentioned confusion very early, but what was the impact on you of hearing your mother essentially being scolded and told that she's no longer considered, part of the community because she's not accepting the tradition?
The impact was big. The impact was big because for me, as far as I was concerned, even to date, this is an adult world. And so for me, I was like, if these adults are having an issue, then the children should not suffer. The children should not suffer. The consequences. Yeah, as in children should just be not thrown away just because this adult has decided to live their life this way. And so for me, the impact was very huge because now just hearing that being said in public was not very good. I think that now maybe they should have dealt with it differently. Tell us children, go outside the room so that now they can discuss whatever they want to discuss as adults. So that now we don't get to be part and parcel of this. Yeah, so I think there's a way where by now adults usually, I think they step on the toes of their children without knowing. Maybe they are fighting over something or they are arguing about something while the children are just there. So it's very damaging. Yeah, I think it's very damaging. Yeah.
I know we're going to get into your work a little later, so I don't. There's a question that I have, but I want to hold off on it because I know it'll come up later.
Yeah.
So you're about so this is when you're about 16. You're reading Shakespeare. You're reading Think Big.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened next in terms of school or university? What came next?
Yeah, so what came next is that I did my primary school exams, and I was the top, and one of the strangest things was that now, on the one hand, I've passed and I've done very well, and then now there was a high school. It was a very prestigious high school that I was supposed to go to. But then again, now I couldn't go to this high school because my mom, okay, like, could not afford it, and so one of the things that for me, like, on the one hand, people are celebrating that, oh, you passed, you've done well, you deserve to go to like a better school. On the other hand, we cannot afford it, and then now, my mom, I remember just, okay, like, just asking her, okay, that can you try asking for someone like to take me to the school? Can you go to a priest? I really want to go to this school because it's a very good school. But then again now nothing happened. And I think it was almost like a few months into high school. Then now one of my uncles came back home from the city. And then told me to accompany him to a nearby school. And this nearby school, I didn't like it. I didn't like this nearby school because it is not a very good school. It's a school where boys who have, okay, let's say, done bad things in other schools, they used to come to that school. And the other reason why I also didn't like this school, because now my uncle transferred his son to a better school. Yeah. So I remember even when we went there. So now we are being just being interviewed. And then now, this deputy head teacher asked my uncle, why have you not taken him to like a better school? And then he said, maybe he can join us. Eventually he can go to a better school. And I didn't even know the meaning of eventually. And so later on, I went home and checked in the dictionary. And I saw that eventually means gradually with time.
Sometime
unfortunately,
later.
With time, I never went to a better school. I just stayed in this school.
So you stayed in the school, which was for boys who had gotten in trouble in other schools.
Mostly, yes, mostly.
Mostly.
Yeah.
And you didn't enjoy it. How did you do?
I didn't enjoy, but you know, the most strangest thing, Ken, is this. In this same school, there were boys who really did very, 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 very well. And I think because of the attitude that they had. But now for me, I had like a very bad attitude about this school, simply because I had this adult telling my uncle, you should have taken him to a better school. So we can enroll him, but eventually he can go to a better school. So for me, I'm like, oh, this is not one of the best schools. And the other thing also, I think also I lacked direction. Like I didn't have someone to maybe direct me, someone who maybe had seen that I'm very good in this course. I was very good in writing and I was very good with words. I was very good. But then again, now I lacked like someone to just guide me, like, listen, this is the school where you are at. So just do the best that you can. But instead of doing this, I was very rebellious. I just keeping school and not doing very well.
And Howie, what would you, if you could, you know, knowing what you, if only you knew then what you know now. I mean, what But what would you want that younger version of yourself? I ask this question often of guests, but this seems like a good time to ask it of you. What would you want to let that younger version of you know?
I would let him know that that your mom was also overwhelmed. There was a lot going on, so do not blame your mom. There was a lot going on in her life, and so instead of blaming her, just choose differently. And also my choice of music, my choice of friends, the things that I would choose to let's say give priority to. Yeah, because right now at my age, right now, I'm actually doing things that when I was younger, I didn't want to do them, like farming. just listening, just sit down and listen to someone. Yeah, because back then I didn't want to listen, especially if someone is telling me things that are different, things that I don't want to hear. So I'll just tell him, relax, listen, get grounded, and do not blame other people for maybe things that are not going on well in your life.
So how much were you, since you bring it up, how much were you blaming your mother or others, and what were you blaming them for?
Yeah, so I was blaming my mom first and foremost for not making sure, for not fighting for me to go to the school where I'd been admitted. Yeah, like that one I was blaming her. The other one that I was blaming her for, there were a lot of times that she would just leave home and go for these fellowships, church things. And then now, as the eldest son, I'm now taking care of other siblings. And then so now that's a very huge responsibility. Yeah, to be given to someone who is 13, 14, 15 years old. Yeah, and even 16. I think for me, those are the things that I was blaming her. But majorly, there's another one. Just before I finished high school, there was this opportunity. So there was this publisher who was looking for junior writers. And so one of my English teachers came and told me about it. And then so now I went and told my mom about it. And so she was just, so my mom was supposed to look for some money, for some bus fare, so that now I can come to the city, to sign up as one of the junior writers. And so my mom did not have this money. But now, so what I was blaming her for, once again, not just fighting, taking me to someone and then telling this person, even this teacher, by the way, my son is a brilliant writer, kindly help him not to miss this chance. So for me, the fact that she was not fighting, just me seeing her fighting on my behalf, that is the thing that that I used to blame her a lot. The other one that I was also blaming, especially the adults, was that the fact that my mom did not follow these customs. And so, but now as a result, now we were also just cast away, simply because she did not follow them. So for me, I'm why did they do this to us? And then again, also the other thing also, it is something that I do nowadays as an adult. Now I can identify that this woman is very overwhelmed. And so this woman needs a father figure for her son. And so now I can just step up and say, young man, listen to your mom, do the right things. Yeah. But then again now when I was growing up, there was no man who was stepping up and just saying, young man, I can see you have this gift and I'm going to help you to navigate through your life. So that is that is something that was missing. Yeah. So I would blame these adults a lot.
And I think I'm hearing you say that and you can tell me whether this is true or not, because it sounds, to my ears anyway,
yeah,
it sounds like you've been able to find some, you haven't used these words, but it sounds like you've been able to find compassion and forgiveness for them.
And I think I did it. I did it in a very strange way, because in 2005 I got arrested, and I stayed under police custody. Okay, like for 8 days. And so there was this.
Wait, I just lost you there for a minute. Did you say so? You were arrested in 2005, and you stayed for 8 days or 80 days?
8 days. 8 days.
8 days. 8 days. Okay.
Eight days. At this police station. Yeah. So this, for me, this was like the longest time ever. So this 8 days. But then again, now within these 8 days, there was a guy. I think he was in his 30s. So this guy just came and said, "Oh, so we know very well that you are innocent. You're not like us." And then he said that you look like you've grown up with a father, and so because you look like you've grown up with a father, which we lacked, yeah. So kindly, please, when you are here, can you kindly share with us about goal setting? Tell us what to do in life, what we should be doing better. And then this guy said also, when you leave this place, kindly go and talk to my son and tell him not to engage in crime, and also tell him that I'm very sorry. And so for me, when I had these things, I even had to ask for a notebook and a pen. And so then just writing my goals, that when I leave here, I'm going to apply for a job as a TV producer. I'm going to apply for a job as a journalist. Yeah. So for me, when I was growing up, I thought that not having grown up with a father, so I was like, if I would have grown up with a father, my life would have turned out differently, only to end up in this place and then someone saying, you look like you've grown up with a father. So for me, that was just mind-boggling. Like, I was like, oh my goodness me, I've been wasting my time saying that I didn't grow up with a father. So I started now thinking, instead of me focusing on my troubles, I should focus on now my treasures. And I started just telling these guys, I started just telling them before I left, that focus on your treasure and not your troubles. Because
just for reference, Howie, how old were you at the time? This is 2005. How old were you?
Can I subtract? Let me do some math. Yeah. So I was 29 years old.
You're
and,
yeah.
I was 29 years old, and I'd spent 13. I'd spent 13 of my life mourning about not having a father.
So you'd spent that time from the time that you were 16 to 29. You spent 13 years of your life mourning the fact that you didn't have a father. Here you end up in arrested, and you're in jail in this police station, with these guys who say, "Boy, clearly you had a father." And interesting. What would you I love the story about shifting your point of your perspective there, from away from what you're lacking to your treasures. And as we're going to wrap up, we're going to come back to this in Act Two. But as we're wrapping up Act One here, where would you point someone? You know, a man, another man. Anyone really? But where would you point another man who has made it a habit of focusing on the things that he lacks? Where would you point him to start to shift his perspective so he could focus more on his treasures? I love that language.
Yeah, so I think for me, we usually focus on education, on cars, on money. But for me, I'll point him to just one thing that he's very good at. One thing that he's very, very good at. Yeah, something that if everything was to be taken away from him, he will be left with just this one thing.
And for you, what was that one thing?
Writing and storytelling.
Yeah, writing and storytelling.
Telling stories and writing, yeah.
So to make the shift, you know, turn your attention from what's lacking to the one thing that you're really good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful. Sage wisdom there. Yeah. Howie, it's been an absolute delight to have you with me and to share you with listeners. And I look forward to where we go in Act Two. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me, Ken Mossman, your host here on Mojo for the Modern Man. And of course, my guest, Howie James Oma. Howie will be back with Act Two next week, depending on when you're listening to this. And in Act Two, he does a brilliant job of being totally, totally human, not just in sharing his story, but he, as he says in the intro for Act Two, of also in his work helping the young boys that he works with see their treasures. And then also in those quieter moments, looking at himself and, as he says, seeing his troubles. It's so beautifully human. I don't have other words for it. Also, check out Howie's good work with links to today's show. And don't just visit Life Song Kenya, but my request is that you leave some money there. Donate whatever you can to his important, important work, and know that it's benefiting these young boys that he sees the treasure in. Invitation to come by my website, kenmossman.com, will get you there. There is a free audio that you can download. You can sign up for my weekly writings, and every episode of Mojo for the Modern Man may be found on that website as well. Shout out a thanks to Carly Farrar for her copywriting expertise, and to Megan Johnson for all of the personal assistance she provides for me. Could not do it without either of them, and they are both at Megan's company, Knack and Company. And of course, a big shout out of thanks to Josh Hines for his musical and sound editing expertise. With that, be well, take care, and we'll see you back here soon on Mojo for the Modern Man.